Today on CityCast Philly, it's the Friday News Roundup. We're talking about the Wells Fargo Center concession workers' strike and what you need to know about a new synthetic opioid that's hit the streets. It's stronger than fentanyl. It's Friday, April 12th. I'm Trinae Nuri, and here's what Philly's talking about. Joining me this week is Lizzie McLellan-Ravitch, workplace reporter at the Philadelphia Inquirer. Hey, Lizzie.
Hi, Trinae. How's it going?
Good. And Aubrey Whalen, health reporter at the Philadelphia Inquirer. Hey, Aubrey.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
So before we get into the news of the week, we have to go back into a time machine and remember a lot of like natural sciencey stuff happened this past week. And as you remember, last Friday, we had the 4.8 magnitude earthquake that struck in northern Jersey, and a lot of us felt it in Philly, and of course, Monday's solar eclipse. But then this week, I saw an article in the Inquirer from Anthony Wood, a weather reporter. He wrote that there were 44 aftershocks were felt after last week's earthquake. Now, my reaction was like, what the hell? I couldn't believe it. And on Wednesday night, I got an alert that there was another aftershock, and that was around a 2.8 in North Jersey. So my question for you, Lizzie and Aubrey, is did you feel the earthquake on Friday, and did you feel any of the aftershocks?
I did feel the earthquake on Friday. I was on a Zoom call when it happened, and it was one of those funny moments over a video call where the person I was speaking to and myself both kind of did one of these looking at each other.
Yeah, like, what? Did you just feel that?
and then I was thinking to myself that it was, maybe it's my laundry getting a little too rowdy or something. And then I thought, wait, no, because the person I'm talking to isn't necessarily doing laundry. So it was very funny to have that shared moment. But I didn't feel any of the aftershocks, not even one, not even the bigger ones that were on Friday night.
Right. Aubrey, what about you?
I was sitting in bed drinking a tea, and the entire room shook, and I thought it was a garbage truck going by. And then the house like kept shaking, and my husband, like you, Lizzie, ran down to the basement because he thought that something was wrong with the washer. So like, it's really good to know that like in a natural disaster, my husband's first thought is the laundry. and then he came back up and he was like, was that an earthquake? And we were like, I guess. Our cat was also on the bed with me. But he did not even move once. So, and I thought animals were like supposed to predict earthquakes. He is not a good earthquake.
I know. I think I saw a video of a dog kind of like its ears just kind of popped up like seconds before the earthquake. So I don't know. None of the animals helped. All right, let's talk about some of the news of the week. Lizzie, you've been covering the Wells Fargo Center concession workers strike. 400 workers stepped off the job for a one-day strike. Can you kind of catch us up? What were workers' demands here?
For those who aren't as familiar with how it works, all the food and drink employees at Wells Fargo Center, you know, bartenders, servers, cooks, they are employed by Aramark. And so, you know, while you might see a certain brand name on the hamburger or, you know, beer that you got, that those employees are employees of Aramark, and they've been negotiating with the company for several months now for a new contract. Those employees are unionized with Unite Here Local 274. You know, for some of these union members, this is their full-time job. They are working a whole lot of events. They're working games for multiple teams. There's, you know, concerts, and there was WrestleMania last week at the Link.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's certainly all sorts of stuff going on at that stadium complex down in South Philly. So a lot of the union members don't have health insurance through their work because of the minimum number of hours required in their contract as it was written last time around. And what they'd like to see is a change in that rule so that they can combine their hours from different stadium venues, and they want to be able to combine their hours to meet that minimum threshold of hours needed to qualify for employer health insurance. So that's one of the big things. And then the other big thing also has to do with kind of standardizing things between those three venues, since a lot of those union members do work at more than one of them. They just want to see the wages standardized across the three venues. So, I mean, long story short, they want to be making more money and they want to be able to get health insurance more easily through their employer.
So, Lizzie, you said many of these workers are full time. Why don't they currently get health care coverage?
That is just how their contract is written at this point. And, you know, what I've heard from the union members and union leaders is that they have been working toward this point over the past few contracts, trying to reach the point where they're at now, where they're asking for this, you know, combining all their hours from the different venues into their eligibility for health insurance through the employer. So it's like any other job, the employer gets to offer a certain benefits package to the workers. And in this case, you've got a union who is asking for more.
Interesting. How has their employer, Aramark, responded to the strike?
The strike that was called on Tuesday, it ran through the 76ers game that night. And Aramark said it had contingency plans in place to make sure that they were still able to serve food and drink at Wells Fargo Center, and that places would be staffed for fans to be able to get some food and drink. But at the same time, the company has said they're committed to bargaining. That's all that they've said publicly, you know, so we'll just have to wait and see when the two sides are able to reach a deal, what that means for each of them.
Now, is it likely that the two sides, Aramark and the workers represented by Unite Here, will come together in an agreement that works for both sides?
Like any other negotiation between a union and their employer, you know, that is, you can't really know for sure until you see it happen and the two sides reach a contract and announce that together.
Right.
And oftentimes that does happen. And so we'll just have to wait and see. You know, the union members who were out picketing on Tuesday were being very clear about what they hope to see in this new contract. And, you know, it sounds like there are still discussions being had.
You can read more of Lizzie's reporting by checking out the link in our show notes. More news of the week after the break. This is CityCast Philly. Aubrey, let's talk about the story you've been covering. It involves powerful synthetic opioids, stronger than fentanyl, that were found in several overdose deaths in Philly. I've heard of fentanyl, xylazine, but what are nitazines?
Yes, so nitazines are kind of a class of opioids. And so like some of these drugs can be up to 40 times more potent than fentanyl.
Wow.
Some of them are closer to potency in fentanyl. There's a lot of them, though. And, you know, we're still kind of learning which ones are circulating in Philadelphia's drug supply. But yeah, they're a synthetic kind of opioid, similar to, you know, they can be produced in the lab the way fentanyl is. And because it's so potent, you know, that means it can be trafficked and transported much more easily than heroin or even fentanyl in some cases.
What are some of like the effects of nitazines?
Because they're so powerful, someone who overdoses on a nitazine analog might need more doses of naloxone to be revived. People who use nitazines or who believe they've been using nitazines have also reported really severe withdrawal symptoms that come on much quicker than fentanyl or xylazine withdrawals. And that also presents a big problem, just kind of like a systemic problem for Philly's drug treatment system, because, you know, this is going to make them feel sicker quicker. And it's going to make it harder for people to seriously consider treatment, because just that the withdrawal pain is a huge barrier to accessing treatment.
Aubrey, you've reported that it's difficult to say exactly how many people have died of nitazine-related overdoses since they first turned up in the city. Do we know when they first showed up in the city?
So the city first detected nitazines in December 2022. They found a nitazine analog called N-diethyl isotonitazine in four separate samples sold on the street as dope. So dope is the kind of catch-all term that the city uses to describe anything sold as an illicit opioid. And then they put out kind of their first alert that these drugs were here. But since then, they've been finding nitazenes, not only in dope samples, but in the toxicology results of overdose victims.
Aubrey, what are the latest numbers on all opioid overdose deaths in the city?
So 1,413 people died from overdoses involving any kind of drugs in 2022. That's the last year for which complete data are available. It takes a while for the city to kind of record and process overdose deaths from the previous year. But yeah, that's a record high, the highest drug death toll the city has ever seen. And that comes after, you know, record highs several years ago as well.
Wow. Aubrey, this is all coming at a time when we're seeing addiction services and harm reduction services becoming politically polarizing in the city. How does this recent news of nitazenes getting onto the street playing into this bigger conversation?
I talked to the health department about, you know, this emerging threat, but I'm not sure that it's kind of emerged into the wider public conversation in the way that, say, fentanyl or xylazine has. It is very new. But harm reduction, you know, generally speaking, has become, you know, a real politically charged topic. Over the last few months with the new mayoral administration, you know, we've seen Mayor Darrell Parker propose pulling funding for syringe exchange or pulling city funding for syringe exchanges and syringe services. We've seen another council member who represents Kensington attempt to intervene in the lease of a harm reduction organization. I just reported about some tensions in Manayunk between an addiction services like community center that also engages in harm reduction efforts around the city, that's been experiencing some tensions with business owners in that area because they believe they're attracting people in addiction to Manayunk. I think that, you know, drug use in Philly has always been really visible, especially in Kensington, but it's certainly not been confined to Kensington. There's been a lot of emphasis on Kensington, politically speaking, with the new administration. And at the same time, you know, we have to kind of remember, I think, that the drug supply itself is just as big of an issue as these quality of life issues that are that people are experiencing because of addiction. That the drug supply's volatility, its toxicity, the fact that it's driving tons of overdoses all over the city, not just in Kensington, is a real issue that's going to contribute to rising overdose deaths, even as the city works on, you know, addressing these very real, very serious quality of life issues. And I think that health officials and people who study public health would say that addressing, you know, and mitigating the harm of our incredibly volatile drug supply is really important to save lives in this very complicated, very politicized crisis.
You can read more of Aubrey's reporting on this topic by checking out the link in our show notes. All right, that was Aubrey Whalen, health reporter at the Philadelphia Inquirer, and Lizzie McClellan Ravitch, workplace reporter at the Philadelphia Inquirer. Thank you both so much for joining me on CityCast Philly today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
It's time for the tip of the week, where we share a life hack for living in Philly. This week, the city announced its lineup of youth programming for the summer. It's also being coined, it's a summer thing. Free and low-cost programs and activities available to children, youth, teens, and families all summer long. You can register for summer camps, free swimming lessons, academic enrichment, and get information on summer jobs. Check out the link in our show notes for more details. If you have a tip of the week, we'd love to hear from you too. Call or text us at 215-259-8170. That's all for today here on CityCast Philly. Our executive producer is Laura Benchoff. Our producers are Abby Fritz, Dylan Brogan, A.K. Al Moman, and Noah Snyderman. Our Hey Philly newsletter editor is Asha Prahar, and our host is me, Trine Nuri. Music is by Philly's own Interminable, with additional music from All the Kimonos and James Weldon. If you enjoyed this episode, tell a friend. rate the show, leave us a review, and subscribe to our morning newsletter, Hey Philly. We'll be back Monday morning with more news from around the city. Have a great weekend and be safe, y'all. Bye.